Welcome into the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. Here's your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki.
Golf Show here on ESPN 1000 on 100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. Tyler Aki and Mike Gilligan, we talk golf with you every single Saturday here on ESPN 1000 all the way through the Ryder Cup. If you want to join us, 312-332-3776. This segment is brought to you by Fox Bend Golf Course. Been talking some Ryder Cup lately. Also talked a little bit about the FedEx Cup Championship and Victor Hovland's dominance. We'll see Victor over in Rome after his run through the PGA Tour this year. But you look at how the U.S. figures to set up against the European team. And I think one of the reasons why you're seeing Justin Thomas on this team, as well as Brooks and a couple other names, but it goes back to the phrase, you're only as strong as your weakest link. And the weakest link on the American side, from a what we saw this year standpoint, is Justin Thomas, who has a winning record in the Ryder Cup. The weakest link on the European side is going to be someone that, in all likelihood, the average golf fan has never heard of before and is ranked outside the top 100 in the world. Like, you're not getting that on the American side. You are getting that, and you may be getting a couple of those names on the European side because of the fact that you're not going to see live golfers on the European side.
That's exactly, you couldn't have put it any better. And I think it's for that reason that there is a incredible void on the European team this go-around as a result of live. So is live going to help the Americans win the Ryder Cup? Maybe. But to your point, one of the guys that's currently fourth is a gentleman by the name of Yannick Paul. If Yannick Paul makes the team, which in all probability he will, he'll be ranked 109th in the world. And our highest ranked player, or lowest ranked player, I should say, depending on how you look at it, is Justin Thomas at 26th. So they are going to have players, after they get through their core handful of players between Rory, Rahm, you know, and Victor, Hovland, you know, maybe you throw in a Tommy Fleetwood, maybe you throw in a Shane Lowry, but after that, oh, it falls quick. Robert McIntyre, who's going to make the team, 55th in the world, and he'll be one of their top players. So they are not going to be deep, folks. And as a result of missing the core villains, those four you mentioned, you put those four with these guys, now I am very concerned about our chances going over there. You remove those four, and now you're sticking in a bunch of rookies who have never seen Ryder Cup from their perspective, even though they'll be on their home soil, but they do not hold a candle to our players, even to Justin Thomas.
And you think about it, too. Like, imagine if this year's event was played on American soil, too. Oh. You'd be talking about one of the all-time blowouts.
It could be
in this event.
Yeah. And it's a saving grace that this thing is over on their soil this year, given what has happened with LIV and the effect that it's having on their ability to pick their team. I wish it wasn't that way. This is going to be, for me personally, one of the weirdest Ryder Cups without Fleetwood, Poult. These are the guys I grew up watching with this thing. And unfortunately, this would have been, I think, a really evenly matched go. And it would be really hard for bettors. But I think I haven't seen any of the lines, but we have to be heavy favorites, I would think, or at least favorites. Maybe not heavy, again, because we're traveling there. But, you know, pound for pound, man for man, our team is much deeper. And I think that's what's going to allow us to be victorious over there.
Let me see if I can find a line on this. Yeah, if anything's out there. But, yeah, it's going to be one of those. All right, Ryder Cup 2023. You've got the U.S. as a -115 favorite, Europe +130, and a tie at 12-1 right now. So,
yeah,
I think you take those odds. If you're, again, it is something that they haven't accomplished in 30 years, but this is as prime a year to do it as ever because of the fact that you're not playing on a level playing field this year because of the omissions that have been forced upon the European team.
And I think being able to get, you know, strategic like Captain Johnson is, and really trying to give them a taste of their own medicine of what they've been doing to us, and we do it back, going over there with a cohesive, experienced, very successful group in this format, match play, understanding four ball, understanding alternate shot. I got to tell you, folks, if you've never played alternate shot, go on out and try it. This weekend, go in your foursome and say, you know what, we're going to do something different. And watch how hard that format is to execute. And try to play it without saying the word "I'm sorry" or the words "I'm sorry." Anytime we play this format, I have a rule right at the first tee. I do not want to hear one apology, because I know you don't want to hit it where you just hit it if it's in a bad spot. I get it. But to have it's a hard, and the pros will tell you, it's really, really hard format. So I just think that having a team that really knows itself inside and out in the locker room, our tendencies on the course, what we like, what shots we prefer to hit versus what we want to try to avoid, is going to go a long, long way. And if I'm Captain Johnson, my strategy is, if I'm picking JT, I'm all in on JT. With the first match of the morning on Fridays is going to be alternate shot. The Americans, being the guests, are going to hit the first ball of the entire Ryder Cup matches. And I would make it Justin Thomas. I'd put him out there first. I'd punch them right in the mouth. And if they get a win, that momentum for the Americans will just start to roll. And if you crank up a Justin Thomas and you allow him to get loud and cocky over there, sparks and fireworks are going to ensue, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
You know, I want you to explain, because I think you do a good job of it, but for people who don't understand chemistry in golf, because it's something that, like, you go out there when you are your usual Saturday hacking, like, you don't understand the need for chemistry at an event like this. But this is a totally different beast when you get into it, because it is reliant on the vibes and kind of how you mesh with your teammates.
Yeah, and there's two formats that we'll often refer to. Well, actually, there's three when you consider singles on Sunday. But Friday and Saturday, there'll be morning and afternoon matches. And in the morning, we start out with what we call alternate shot. In other words, there's only two golf balls in play for the guys. So if you and I are a team, you know, we got to make a decision based on par fives, you know, and the course setup. Are you the long hitter out of the two of us, or am I it? Am I better off hitting second shots into par fives or hitting the tee shot on par fives? Mm-hmm. So you really take a look at how the golf course fits us as a unit. And then, you know, if all the par threes fall in a way that they're, you know, middle to long irons, let's say, and you're the Colin Morikawa of our group, we're going to make sure that you hit as many of those tee shots versus me. And that's some of the thought process that goes into it. In the afternoons, they're going to play what we call four ball. But in America, we kind of call it best ball. So you'll play your ball through the green, through the hole, as will I. But in that format, if I understand who you are, how you play, and you have a ball in play and I do too, if I know you're looking down the smokestack and you are ready to go for birdie, all I need to do is make sure I put in a safe spot so I can give you full go. And knowing the shots that you like to play and what are your stock and go-to plays, these are all important for me to know, because if I know you're in a position where, oh, you're putting the hammer down, well, then I may not be as aggressive, but I'm going to put you in a spot so you can be as aggressive as you want, and we're covered either way. So
it influences how you play your game, because you're always cognizant of putting your teammate in the best position. Like, it really is. You're playing point guard at all times, it feels like.
It really is. And you are trying to set each other up for the most amount of success possible. And if, you know, you can assure, if I can assure you I'm in for par and you get a free ride at a birdie run, I mean, I will absolutely wrap my putter around your neck if you're short. You know, I mean, it's like, come on. Why would you leave this short? Right? Because I just gave you all the opportunity. What is it? Gretzky says that, you know, 99% of all putts that are short never go in.
Yeah.
You know, so it's that kind of mindset and putting yourself in positions that you just don't see in stroke play. I mean, how often in stroke play are you rolling it for birdie with no fear of having even to take the next putt? So you can make a legitimate, hard, aggressive run at a birdie without feeling like, well, if I knock this thing 6 feet by, because you're already in the hole. But if you're not and you're scrambling for a bogey, it changes exactly how I may not be as aggressive. I might go for the fat part of the green, and we might just have to accept a par here.
Yeah, it's one of the things you don't think about when you're going about your everyday round. But when these guys end up in Rome in a couple of weeks here, it's going to be a totally different mindset. You're not playing the same golf that you're playing on the tour.
Yeah, it just goes back to what I said at the beginning of the show. Stroke play is a lot different than match play. It just is. We're not looking for guys. So I know when people get all up in arms about Justin Thomas, how could he be on the team? We're not asking him to play 72 holes. We're asking him to beat one person. And I don't care who you put in front of Justin Thomas. I like Justin Thomas's eyes. Because, you know, his record speaks to it.
Well, even look at like who he could be matched up with on the other side, right? He's not going up against Tommy Fleetwood or Victor Hovland or Rory or Rahm. Like, he's going up against the guys that you mentioned at the beginning. Like
Yannick Paul.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What do you think Yannick Paul's going to feel like when he's got to go up against a guy that's, you know, 6-0-0
and won a major 2 years ago?
Won the major and is perhaps one of the most successful Ryder Cup players in American history, given his record. But even when you combine, you know, was he 16-5-1 or something between the match or Ryder Cup and President's Cup? Boy, he goes and plays up against one of, you know, Adrian Meronk, Yannick Paul, Victor Perez. These guys, it's going to be a new experience for them. That is for sure.
When you put it in that context, it justifies the pick so much easier. It's such a different argument when you put it in the context of, look who he's taken on.
Well, and obviously that'll be the chess match that the captains will play with each other as, because who, you know, what's going to be Captain Johnson's strategy? So does he try to get Rory and, you know, somebody in that first group thinking that's what he's going to do? Or does Zach say, you know, I'm going to put him out there, but I'm going to put him last in that morning round? Zach is trying to get that matchup. Zach wants Justin against any of these newbies all throughout the weekend. Mm-hmm. He wants that, because there becomes the intimidation factor. You mean we got to go up against Spieth and Thomas? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it reminds me of the story.
It's JV versus varsity.
It is. It really is. And the pressure that these guys feel, to give you the quick illustration, in 1993, when Tom Kite was the captain, Davis Love and his partner, it was morning of the Ryder Cup Friday to get started, and they were going to go out in the first group. And Kite told Davis, well, I got you. You're going to hit him on all the odd holes. And he said, okay. And he walked away. And then it dawned on him, I have to hit the very first shot of this entire thing. He went back and pleaded with Kite to give him the evens. And Kite saw right through what he was trying to do. And he said, Davis, just sit back, rely on you, all your experiences. You'll be just fine. And so admittedly, he said, I didn't hit driver. I put the 3-wood in my hand. And he said, I had to rely on all the experience going back to junior golf. He says, to this day, I still don't even remember hitting it, but all I know is I flushed it and it went down the pipe, and then the rest of the day went off like, you know, just like it should have. But here's Davis Love, nervous. There's no money on the line, and he's over there, nervous as can be, to hit the first tee shot of a Ryder Cup. That, to me, is so telling. And, I just think having a Justin Thomas is going to be a key move for us, especially if we can get the right matchups. I think we're in for a wonderful outcome.
Yep. Can't wait for it. We are about 4 weeks away now from the Ryder Cup getting going over in Rome. All right, when we come back, a guy who was a Ryder Cup stud and is one of the most important golfers ever made his debut yesterday, 27 years ago. We'll talk about all that when we come back. This is the CDGA Golf Show. This segment brought to you by Fox Bend Golf Course.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. From PGA to where you should play, this is the CDGA Golf Show with Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
This segment brought to you by Golf Elgin, home of Bowes Creek Country Club and the Highlands of Elgin. This is a big anniversary week in the world of golf because one of the biggest icons, not just in all of golf, but in the history of sports, made his professional debut.
I guess, hello world, huh?
First tournament as a professional, Tiger Woods.
14th hole, 202-yard par 3 with a 6-iron.
Bring it in there.
The 9th hole-in-1 of his young life. Yeah, that's yours. And there's the scramble.
This is a very makeable chip he's got here.
Oh, that's better. The short holes haven't been...
Well, he's had trouble putting it in. Now he chips it in.
That's right. Up in Milwaukee, in the Greater Milwaukee Open, Tiger Woods teed it up for the first time 27 years ago. And you heard, like, right away, the highlights were on. He had an ace on in his first tournament. He had a chip in from off the green. I mean, he was everything as advertised in that first tournament. People got their money's worth for sure.
No doubt. And from there, it just kept ascending upward in a way that allowed him to become the first billion-dollar athlete in 2009. But what was more amazing, what he did at Milwaukee, to me, he set a precedence that no other golfer has ever done in his life. And that includes the likes of Hogan, Palmer, Trevino, Nicklaus. Before he actually put the ball on the peg for the first shot as a professional, he had already $60 million in the bank account because that's how revered and regarded he was. Because you have to remember, he had just won the U.S. Amateur in August.
Yes.
And it was at that point that the Stanford coach looked at him and said, Tiger, there's no reason for you to keep playing in college. And so he actually endorsed him to leave Stanford early, and he did. And, you know, the rest of it is history. But, you know, a lot of players, when Tiger first came out, a lot of players were very, very envious, very jealous of him because they felt it somewhat unfair that he was set up in a position where all he was wired to do now is to win. He didn't have to worry about making, quote, a living, you know. And, you know, Chip Beck always got criticized for laying up at, you know, the 15th hole at Augusta when, you know, most people would go for it. But his point was, well, look, I, you know, second or third gets a heck of a nice payout. So he's trying to make a living, where Tiger, it was always full go. I'm going for everything. I'm trying to win. And that's what this is all about, being in a position now to win majors. And, you know, obviously that's how we judge a guy's career, whether it's Hall of Fame, you know, worthy or not. But Tiger was in that position. And early on, there was a lot of animosity of the players towards Tiger. But as Tiger proved that he was worth that and a bag of chips, then all the players started to realize this guy's the real deal. He is special. He is not only generational, but it could be lifetime of a type of individual like this that is so very talented, so very special, and so very prepared to win at the highest level. And then he started becoming more of respected by the players than feared. And all Tiger had to do is show up. And the fear was there, especially donning the red shirts that he started to do. So it was just, it's an amazing evolution of watching how Tiger started out as a young boy and where we are today. But it all got started professionally. What was it, 27 years ago?
Yes, yesterday. 27 years ago. And so, first billion-dollar athlete you mentioned, right?
Mm-hmm.
How much do you think he made on his first professional paycheck from this tournament? How much do you think Tiger netted? He already had $60 million in the bank account, so there wasn't a lot of stress financially, but this is how much he made.
So let's see. Okay, this is prior to Tiger influence to the purse.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say $30,000.
Way overshot it. Bob Barker would not be. He is rolling in his grave right now. He made $2,544.
Wow. Wow. And it's almost not worth his time.
In comparison to, yeah. You want to know how much Jack Nicklaus made in his pro debut? This is 1962.
The only reason I think I know this is because we made the exact amount on my pro debut, $33.
$33.33. You get that for working 2 hours at McDonald's.
Yeah, I just got the 33. He made 33 more cents than I did. Mine, unfortunately, was in an Illinois assistant event up at Glen Flora, but his was obviously out on the real tour.
Yeah, but yeah, so $2,500 for him in his first event. And I mean, he wouldn't even bat an eye. Like for some pro players, like that's a big deal. First event, and obviously now the purses are way different thanks to Tiger Woods. But it's just one of those things that it shows you how much he changed the game to the point now where you look at Victor Hovland this past week. He got $18 million for his accomplishments from the season.
26 years old. And he got an $18 million bonus last Sunday. It's just amazing. And again, you talk about the Tiger influence, the Tiger factor, or the Tiger effect. And it comes in all ways, shapes, and forms. And, you know, managing, you know, all the Ryder Cups and PGA Championships that we did, we always had to be on notice of where Tiger was, when was he arriving, when was he leaving, because of the impact from a gallery perspective on silly, dumb things like concessions. As he would come through the golf course, he would absolutely, the crowd that followed would just destroy every concession stand in its way. And then it was, we need a restock over here at 14, because if he happens to come back at 16 or 17 on his way through, it's going to happen again. And so the Tiger effect went for everywhere, from the influence on the money to endorsements and what we're endorsing and who's getting in the endorsement game to the effect on concession stands at an event. Tiger Woods, we got to grow up and watch him. We're so close to watching everything that he did that I don't really think that we truly have an appreciation for everything that he has done for this game just by being Tiger Woods.
Right. And the way that this has always been the most fascinating part for me with Tiger, and especially in a sport like golf where you have longevity, right? I mean, 27 years later, I get it's not frequently now, but he's still playing.
Mm-hmm.
He bred his competition.
Yep.
Absolutely bred his competition. Everyone wanted to be a Tiger. It's the same thing you could say to a degree about Michael Jordan, but Michael didn't face a lot of the guys that he bred. Tiger is facing guys that weren't even born.
He's playing
in groups with guys who weren't even born by the time he had teed it up for the first time.
Well, like Victor Hovland wasn't born when Tiger hit his first tee shot. That to me is.
And what? They played
incredible.
In a Masters grouping together, I believe?
Yeah, they have. And that's the amazing part. And I, you know, Tiger's now at a point in his life that I now look at him a bit differently than, you know, he was nothing but just so dialed in and had blinders on. To me, as he's gotten a little bit more mature in his life and, you know, the life that he's had, he's now with kids and looking at life a lot differently. And I just think that Tiger is enjoying the fruits of all of his labor. But more than anything else, I think he's now beginning to realize the effect he really had on all these young superstars that are coming up. I mean, they all admired and wanted to be like him. And it's just amazing at what he has done for this game in ways that I would have never thought that one individual could have such an impact. And he has. And it's amazing. And, you know, I'm thankful and grateful the fact that I got to witness it in my lifetime, because there are people that are, you know, young now saying, who's Tiger Woods? And you're like, are you kidding me? Yeah. You don't know who he is? And it's kind of like, no, I've heard of him, you know, but they're not watching him anymore because he's not playing and they're starting to get into the game. So it's interesting to see the byproduct of everything that he has contributed and given and earned for this game. But it all got started 27 years ago professionally yesterday.
What is your favorite Tiger Woods moment? It's been 27 years of them that we've had since then. 312-332-3776. We'll take all your calls when we come back. This segment brought to you by Golf Elgin, home of Bowes Creek Country Club and the Highlands of Elgin. The CDGA Golf Show will be right back.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. Golf is on your mind and on the air right now. This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. Presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
With you here on the CDGA Golf Show, your favorite Tiger moments. This week, 27 years ago, he teed it up for the first time professionally up at the Greater Milwaukee Open. If you want to join us, 312-332-3776. This segment is sponsored by PGA Tour Superstore. Visit any of our Chicagoland locations today. They've got four right now, soon to be five. Orland Park, Downers Grove, Schaumburg, Vernon Hills, and a new one opening in Lincoln Park on September 16th. So 2 weeks from today, there will be a new one. I drove by it the other day, and I saw the signage, and I'm like, has there always been a PGA Tour Superstore here? Or have I been missing out on this? No, they're opening up in 2 weeks, so I have not been missing out on it. But you can, right off the Fullerton, off the Fullerton exit on 94.
We'll be broadcasting from there in 2 weeks.
Yep. 312-332-3776. Talking about your favorite Tiger Woods moments. It's a lot that you can certainly pick from.
Oh, yeah.
I'll let you start here because I'm sure you've got quite a few.
Well, the one that I immediately think about, three actually. The hole in one at, you know, the Waste Management immediately comes to mind. But early in his career in 1997 at the Mercedes, back when they had the Mercedes Championship, it was a rain shortened event, and it was ended up, because of the poor weather they had on Sunday, they had to make it a 54 hole event. And at which point Tiger Woods and Tom Lehman had the lead and they were tied. So they needed them to come out on Monday and have a sudden death playoff. And it was going to start on a par three. So the rains were still there. It was raining raining hard too, by the way. And Tom Lehman hit first and pulls it into the water. Tiger, as we find out later, when he warmed up at the range, he only hit one club. It was a 5-iron. And so the announcer said, well, this shouldn't be anything too dramatic. He's probably just going to fire this into the middle of the green and basically win the tournament. He stuck it to like 3.5 inches, and one swing, that's all it was, and he wins the tournament. So that was pretty wild. The Bell Canadian Open, the second shot at 18, when he was in a bunker and had to make the thing go out and literally make a right turn and finished within, again, inches of the hole, are the top three in my mind, because one of them was from the tee, one of them was out of the bunker, and well, both actually from the tee, because the par three sudden death. But in different formats, sudden death, not sudden death, in the routine of an event, and then the 18th coming home to win. So Tiger has demonstrated shot-making abilities of all kinds and all sorts, different places on the golf course at different times on the golf course. So, yeah, a bit there is an infinite number of great shots that this guy has.
Well, you know what Phil Knight's favorite one is.
Oh.
And that is 2005 16th hole at the Masters.
That was pretty
when
special.
The Nike logo is sitting there and you see it
freeze
drop
frame.
In. Yep. And they tell the story too that CBS nearly cut away from it because
That's
they
true.
Thought the shot had stopped.
Stopped.
They nearly cut away from it, and they used their instincts at the last second to stick with it for one of the most iconic shots in golf history. For me, it'll always be the 2019 Masters and him just walking up that 18th fairway, and with him come the masses as well. Just because I think it kind of goes and tells the essence of Tiger. Just when you thought he was out, He has one more run in him.
That's right.
And we got to a point where we thought we would never see another Tiger Woods major win. We didn't even know if we'd see Tiger Woods on a golf course ever again. And there he comes out to the 2019 Masters and goes out and wins the thing. Like, that entire experience, that entire 4 days was just quintessential Tiger Woods and everything that we had gone to see from him over the course of his career.
Yeah, I mean, and his career is without question the greatest of all time, as far as the many of the accomplishments. Yes, Jack will always have more majors, and at this point it looks like he may not get the total wins record, but overall his dominance is second to none. The only area, though, as we keep talking about Ryder Cup, he was not all that great a Ryder Cup player. I mean, he was average. He was okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, in 37 Ryder Cup matches, his record is 13-21-3. So again, I think early in Tiger's career, he had a tough time building that chemistry with players. He was good individually, but then who really played well with Tiger?
Right.
And who had the mental capacity to play with Tiger?
Because, yeah, it's a different beast when you are talking about these team events. And, like, his stardom sort of alienates him.
It does.
And it's something that up until recently, you didn't see the charisma of Tiger that you see now where everyone on the tour loves him. There was a long stretch where people just feared him because he was not the nicest guy
nope.
to deal with on the tour.
And it carried over into the locker room. And it was, you know, when you put Tiger on your Ryder Cup team, it came really at a cost because of it. Just like you said, Tiger created a fear factor, an intimidation factor, even for his own teammates. And I think if Tiger was as he is now early in his career, his Ryder Cup record would be entirely different.
You'd see the record flip.
You really would. Nobody could get comfortable playing with him, and it was just that simple.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, I'll never forget, like, when I was a kid, I would walk down into the basement, my dad would be on the elliptical, and he'd just be watching golf. And I'd be like, why are you watching golf? And every time I would walk down there, I would see the leaderboard that they were showing, and it was Tiger Woods. It wasn't just on top. He was on top by 10, 12, maybe even 15 strokes at times.
But you just never knew what was going to be next. And that was the intrigue, the curiosity, and the must-see TV factor, because anything could happen at any time because there was nothing the man couldn't do. And it was almost as if the announcers would say, oh, this is an impossible shot. And then he'd pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
The moment you told him he couldn't do something, he turned around and did it. So just, again, you know, a unicorn in that sense of things. But
yeah.
Definitely a very special player to the game in more ways than one. But, yeah, he's to be celebrated.
He was someone who was never lacking for confidence either,
nope.
even when he was young. This was him with Curtis Strange. Right before his pro debut.
Two things. I think if I play 4 solid rounds, we'll go off to a good start today. If I can do that for 3 more days, I'll be very happy. And a victory would be awfully nice, too.
A victory?
Mm.
Do you think, to me, that comes off as a little cocky or brash, especially talking to the other guys on tour that have been out here for years and years and years, and, you know, certainly an incredible amateur record, but what do you say to those guys?
I've always figured that why go to a tournament if you're not going there to try and win? There's really no point in even going. That's the attitude I've had my entire life, and that's the attitude I will always have. As I will explain to my dad, second sucks, and third's even worse. That's just a feeling.
But on tour, that's not too bad sometimes, though.
That's not too bad, but I want to win. That's just my nature.
You'll learn. I'm just kidding you. I'm sorry I had to say that.
That was Tiger, 20 years old.
Yep.
And second and sucks, and third's even worse.
And, oh, does Curtis Strange rue that interview? Because, you know, at the time, you know, Curtis Strange is a heck of a player, went back-to-back U.S. Opens. I mean, this guy was one of the best in the world. And, you know, that interview was so telling. To me, that was the ultimate passing of the torch. And, oh, did we not know what was about to happen after that interview and how right Tiger was. And that was his mentality, and he made no apologies for it, and he won't. And it was because of that that he could face, you know, in an interview, Curtis Strange in the Golf Hall of Fame, multiple major winner, an icon in his own right, and he's just telling him like it is. And he doesn't care if you're, you know, Curtis Strange, Jack Nicklaus, or Arnold Palmer. This is how he is wired, and he's going to make no mistakes and no bones about it and no apologies.
Real quick, before we hit the break, Randy is in Orland Park. He's got some Ryder Cup thoughts. What's up, Randy?
Yeah, I just want to not underestimate the European team. They may not be as deep, right? But, I mean, they've got Rahm and Rory, and Fleetwood's playing great. Tyrrell Hatton's dangerous. Matt Fitzpatrick. You know, Hovland obviously is probably the best player in the world at the moment. And, you know, you got four guys that sit out every foursomes and four ball events. So they don't have to be as deep. And if they get on a roll, they could be tough to beat. And a lot of our guys aren't putting very well. Scheffler, Morikawa, yeah. You know, should Justin be on the team? I mean, who knows, right? So I just want to. You know, that's kind of my thought. I mean, I hope we win, obviously, but a little more nervous about it than cocky, I'll tell you.
That's fair. It's
that's fair.
And Randy, it's something that hasn't happened in 30 years.
Yes.
The Americans winning on European soil.
So Randy's right. I mean, Randy has every right to be concerned because the record shows we don't do well over there. But what I do like is we're becoming change catalysts in how we are approaching going over there this time. And to me, that's going to be the difference. Are our best players playing their very best right now? Maybe not, but they've got a few weeks to hopefully correct some things and get themselves into a mental place which is strong and confident. But he's right. They do have a core of really, really good players.
Very top heavy.
Very top heavy. But yes, they do get to sit guys out, but you can't sit all these other guys out all week. You just can't. And you can go to the well, but you can't tire these guys out because you could hurt them when it really matters most is on the singles. So if you put guys out and they play morning, afternoon, by the time they get to Sunday, they could be, you know, mentally and physically fatigued in a sense when it comes down to the mano-a-mano for 1 point every single match, 12 matches out there. So you have to be a bit careful. And if somebody on their team, one of these good players, starts to have a bad, you know, week or weekend themselves, they could find themselves on the bench. And then the Europeans have to rely on that youth. So, you know, should we be concerned? Absolutely. This is no gimme layup by any stretch of the imagination. I think we should be favored. But if all goes right, yeah, I think we should win. But I could also see a scenario where we don't.
Yep. 312-332-3776. If you want to join us when we come back, we'll go around the CDGA. This segment sponsored by PGA Tour Superstore. Visit their locations in Orland Park, Downers Grove, Schaumburg, Vernon Hills, and on September 16th, the grand opening in Lincoln Park.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. How's your golf game? Yeah, mine too, but more on that later. It's time for more golf talk on the CDGA Golf Show, your guide to golf around the world and in your neighborhood. The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki.
To Charlie Bevins for producing today's show. This segment brought to you by Coghill Golf and Country Club, a pure golf experience. Time to go around the CDGA. Mike, what is happening this week?
Well, there's actually a lot going on. First and foremost, hopefully everybody is enjoying the August edition of the Chicago District Golfer. We are in a brief pause as we head into the month of September here with our championships and various finals on both our tournaments and social competitions. So with that being said, we only have a couple of events left before the championships all begin, and one of them is a great member day opportunity. And what is a CDGA member day, you ask? Well, if you're you become a member at Flossmoor Country Club for the day. So on September 11th, we had to reschedule due to rain. We have eight spaces left. We have 92 players. We're going to have 100. So if you want to join us on September 11th to play what I think is one of the best country clubs in our district, Flossmoor Country Club, then go to cdga.org and $150 gets you a green fee, cart, lunch at Flossmoor Country Club on Monday, September 11th. It's a 10 a.m. shotgun. And then also, due to the excessive heat we had 2 weeks ago, we had to postpone the final of the four-person scramble qualifier up at Sunset Valley to Monday, September 18th, where we will send six teams to the finals at Bowes Creek and later in September. So if you have a foursome of friends that you want to put a team together, you could still enter the Sunset Valley qualifier. Just go to cdga.org. For CDGA member perks of the week, you always remember you've got the Jersey Mike's $2 off any sandwich at any Chicagoland Jersey Mike's. Phillips Park Golf Course out west. CDGA members, you can take advantage of a member offer of two players, $80, Monday to Friday before 3, and that includes green fee, cart, and a large bucket of balls. The Highlands of Elgin. CDGA members can play Monday to Wednesday before noon for $59, including a cart, and that'll go through September 27th, and the offer is only not good on Labor Day. Sunset Valley, CDGA members, you can receive a special twosome rate of 110 with a cart, and that is good Monday to Thursday after 1. So lots going on in terms of your abilities to get out and play some golf and take advantage of some of the member perks. And another reminder, CDGA members, Titleist has arrived to the CDGA.
Love to hear it.
Yeah, we have been Titleist Pro Vs and Pro V1s are going out the door really hot, because we will send them to your house for the same price you would go to PGA Superstore to buy them, but we're not going to charge you the tax or the shipping. It will arrive to your house, $54.99. And when you buy Titleist golf balls through our store, you are enabling us to provide programs for youth, veterans, and individuals with various disabilities to expose them for the therapeutic value of what golf brings us. So a lot going on, and I hope everyone has a great weekend. Play some golf. Get out there. Be safe. And remember to replace your divots and fix your ball marks.
All right. Going to be a hot weekend, but a good weekend for golf here this Labor Day weekend. Appreciate everyone listening. We'll be back with you next week. This segment brought to you by Coghill Golf and Country Club, home of 42 practice bays with top tracer technology. I'm sticking around for Chicago's College Tailgate. Coming up next with Shay Norling here on ESPN 1000. Talk to you next week.
More golf ahead. The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.